Henry Mancini composition from the old Peter Gunn soundtrack?
No.
No, that's Phil Woods and Carl Saunders doing
that. Interesting.
I like it.
It says here Harry Mancini, like it. but it's clearly Henry Mancini. Wow. It's the roundtable at WAMC, 14 minutes after 9 o'clock, and Friday morning, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the panel, and you can join us by emailing panel at WAMC.org. What a panel we have today. WAMC's Alan Shartok, former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Henk, counterterrorism expert Malcolm Nance, socialist scholar and philosopher Rich Honan, all here with us today on
the program. Socialist scholar.
No. I'm sorry. It's corporate attorney. I apologize.
You know, Ray, there's always somebody out there who doesn't understand humor or sarcasm.
Tell me about it.
And then they write us a letter.
Everyone would have gotten that one.
Not everyone. Trust me.
Well, Alan got it, so, I mean, we're close to all the way there. Yeah. Well, I've had enough of this cold weather. The polar bomb or the cyclone, whatever they're calling it. It was a deep freeze. Now with us after a winter storm dumped as much as 18 inches of snow in spots right along the coast from the Carolinas up to Maine. And we have record-breaking cold air coming in. Tomorrow will be very, very cold. The South won't be spared. I grew up around here. And probably some of you guys did too. Have you had enough of the winter? Have you had enough?
I'm just surprised we have winter because, you know, I've been out here over 10 years and every Christmas we'd fly in from the Middle East. And this year reminds me of the winter from 8 years ago where we had the blizzard at Christmas.
Yeah.
And sustained sub-zero temperatures don't strike me as normal. And the temperatures usually were in the 30s, maybe in the high 20s. And of course, coming from a country that was like 90 to 100 degrees and flying back, I really paid close attention to the temperature, and this just seems a little worse than normal.
Well, I'm sorry, Judith.
This is extreme weather, and I think this is the part of the show where we have to remind everyone that just because it's cold doesn't mean there's not climate change.
Yeah.
And part of climate change is not just heat, it is extreme weather. And that's what this is. This is colder than usual.
Can I make a PSA on that point? I'm a mountaineer. I actually high altitude mountain climbed back in the day.
And mm-hmm.
This weather reminds me of places like Annapurna and Everest, Camp 1. These temperatures are really severe, and if you don't have the right clothing, please, for God's sakes, if you see people in cotton hoodies, get them off of them and put them in fleece. This is not appropriate for this area.
Wind chills will really dip into the minus 20, minus 30, minus 40 range, depending on where you are. A lot of schools are closed today.
Yeah, I want to
not my kids.
I want to make a point not to play the conservative on this issue, but we got here. Roselle and I moved full time to Great Barrington in 1971, actually to Alford, right outside of Great Barrington. And we had several 20 degree below zero days when we got here in 1971. So this stuff, to some degree, is cyclical.
I believe it's the first time since 1989 we've had as many as 6 or 7 days of below zero in Albany area. But it does happen.
Yeah, I live in Stockport, and we have a lithograph from 1850 of children playing at the bottom of a waterfall and completely frozen, moving creek, ice skating on it.
Yeah,
so I think this is normal.
Yeah.
And what we've been experiencing over the last 10 years that have been mild are the extreme.
Well, I still don't like it.
I don't like it either.
There's nothing to like.
But there are lots of things I don't like.
I'm waiting for our 70-degree day, though, because that usually pops up.
It'll be in the low 30s Monday, and we'll be out in our tank tops. It'll feel so warm. Once again, our email address here is panel@wamc.org if you want to weigh in today. Marijuana-related stocks plummeted. Cannabis boosters are worried about the growing industry's future. Defiant growers and sellers vowed to keep operating after Attorney General Jeff Sessions shelved an Obama-era policy that advised authorities to tread lightly on enforcing marijuana laws in states that have legalized weed. It's not clear what impact the change will have on federal prosecutions. Stocks... to use the term, took a hit yesterday. A Canopy Growth, a Canada-based company, lost 10% of its share value yesterday. Meanwhile, Massachusetts top federal prosecutor Andrew Lelling said yesterday his office will aggressively pursue serious marijuana crimes, but isn't directly addressing the state's legal recreational pot law. Marijuana regulators in Massachusetts say nothing has changed after Sessions' announcement. U.S. attorney in Colorado, same thing. No change to marijuana enforcement. And while all that was happening, Vermont's House of Representatives signed off on legislation that will allow adults 21 years or older to possess up to an ounce of marijuana and grow marijuana at their homes. What do you make of all this, Alan Chartok?
Well, first of all, I think it's important for all of us to announce where we're coming from. My students always laugh when I told them this over the years, but I've never smoked marijuana, not once
really?
In my life.
I mean, you played the banjo.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have helped.
I did, but I've never smoked marijuana. Number two, I think there are certain dangers in driving while imbibing and things of that kind. And I know that there will be people who immediately write me letters about alcoholism and two wrongs make a right and all the rest of this kind of stuff. But it is of concern to me. Nevertheless, right now we have a thriving marijuana industry in this country, and it is run by the underworld. So if it's going to be, we may as well have it, and we may as well have it above board, and we may as well have whatever kinds of restrictions we can put on it. Now, and then I'll shut up, you know, this idea that these U.S. attorneys who are seeing their boss, Jeff Sessions, come down with this thing, are having to make a decision. Uh-oh, how do I get out of the way of this one? So they're saying, we're only going to go after serious marijuana violations. Well, one could say the most serious would be the state government running marijuana. And I don't know what that means, what serious means. It may mean some guy in the back room, making a fortune on illegal marijuana sales, but it may mean that we're going to have a 10th Amendment problem here.
Well, I think it's really hard for U.S. attorneys to ignore this directive from their boss in Washington. I think the real question is, what is the federal interest here? When President Trump ran for office, he was interviewed when he was in Colorado, for instance, and he said he thinks this should be up to the states. This is not going to be a priority for him. I think the much deeper issue is, why isn't Jeff Sessions in the Department of Justice focusing in a serious way on the opiate crisis?
Right.
There are some states and local governments, including locally, that have initiated litigation against pharmaceutical companies for flooding certain communities with these prescription drugs. I mean, talk about a real issue that desperately needs federal attention. It's that.
I know in parts of the Tri-County area here around the Capital District, I was told by a senior state intelligence official, drug intelligence official, that marijuana access for high school level, university level kids is deliberately being restricted so that they can push them onto heroin.
And who does the restricting, Mel?
The illegal people who are growing these crops illegally. Mm-hmm. So those markets of the drug lords have an interest in limiting the amount and in keeping the illegality of marijuana. So Vermont, by making it legal, will actually probably lessen their opiate crisis. I don't think it's as serious a gateway drug as possible. But if it drops off the radar and all you can get is heroin or some form of crack cocaine, because the drug dealers out here just create a new market, well, then I think it's a positive thing.
I want to hear what Rich has to say, because he's a conservative.
Exactly. And you mentioned the 10th Amendment.
Conservative, and I'm sure he, like me, has never smoked marijuana.
I don't smoke marijuana.
Mm-hmm. William F. Buckley went out to international waters
in
and smoked marijuana.
Okay, so I'm still in a band. But anyway. Well, first of all, I don't think the Sessions, I don't think it's that much of a directive. I think it's really more that it allows U.S. attorneys, should they decide is just another arrow in their quiver. If they want to do it, fine. If not, not.
But it's interesting. I'm sorry for interrupting. Yeah. But you know that he had that option. He could have said, I direct you to, as you just imply or infer or whatever.
When your boss tells you, and if you work in the federal government, as I have, and your boss says, we are now prioritizing this, most U.S. attorneys, I think, will look at this differently than perhaps they were last week. I mean, they've got a heavy caseload. They've got to make decisions. A directive comes from Washington. They take it seriously.
Well, I don't think so. I think they're just unprioritizing the previous policies of we're going to pick and choose which laws we enforce, which is, I understand, that is the job of the U.S. attorneys. But I think, you know, the overall theme here is we've proceeded over the last several years to make social policy not so much by legislation, not by Congress, but through things like executive orders and regulation and courts. And we're seeing now that, you know, that's not a great way to go because, you know, there's no stability, right? So a Republican, you know, a Democrat does something by executive order and then, a Republican does something different. And I think you're seeing that a little bit. So, but I don't think he's telling people to go out. I think he's just saying, you know, you can prosecute this if you want. I'm not saying it's a priority. I'm just saying that it's there available.
But that was always the case.
Well, no, the Obama administration put guidelines in place that essentially de-emphasized these enforcements and also left it to the states. That was kind of the foundation of the Obama policy.
Yeah, but I don't know Sessions how different this is.
Well, Sessions said he's repealed the Obama guidelines.
But
on this.
But he right. hasn't. But you're not to split hairs. He hasn't directed people to say make this a priority.
Well, but you guys are talking about this substantively, and I think you ought to be addressing this politically. In other words, my lens is, who is Sessions satisfying here? And is that the president who said, as you said, because nothing he says means anything, as you know. He says so one thing on Wednesday and he says something else on Thursday. But this is more red meat for his constituents, right? Yeah. This marijuana.
I don't know. I think this is coming from Sessions himself. He has been very outspoken on this.
Yeah, but Trump's the one who called himself the law and order president. He co-opted the police unions. He's expanded through Sessions. He's actually expanding the for-profit prison system in the United States. And if you want to be real cynical about it, if you're expanding for-profit prisons, you got to get people in prison. And so if you have simple guidelines like don't go out, you know, limit your enforcement action against very small quantities of marijuana, that's going to limit your prison population.
And Malcolm, by the way, I have to say, I turned on MSNBC the other day and there you were. I was so proud that the guy who really is primarily a WAMC person also consented to go on to MSNBC. Okay.
Who are we talking about?
Yeah, but
just go with the flow, Malcolm.
Okay, but Ray says ignore him. But, you know, Sessions is the man of the moment right now in Washington. We can't forget that.
Oh, and we have to talk about that
Michael
after the
story. Michael Scherer's story.
And we really do have to talk about that because to some degree, I believe this is just another maneuver to help the president.
All right, well, let me set this up before our break, and then we'll get to this and your emails as well. A person familiar with the matter says President Donald Trump directed his White House counsel to tell Attorney General Jeff Sessions to not recuse himself from the Justice Department's investigation into potential ties between Russia and the Trump campaign. The person says the conversation between Don McGahn and Sessions took place on the president's orders and occurred just before the attorney general announced that he would step aside from the inquiry. Two other people confirmed details of the conversation. All three spoke, of course, on condition of anonymity to the Associated Press to avoid publicly disclosing and discussing an ongoing investigation. The episode is known to Special Counsel Robert Mueller and his team of prosecutors and is likely to interest them as they look into whether Trump tried to obstruct the Russia investigation. We only have about a minute and a half here before the BBC break. Let's just throw it over to Alan for 30 seconds and then Malcolm for 30.
Well, I yield my time to the senator from Starkport.
Okay.
Kathy Marchione's in the area?
Hey.
That story is absolutely fascinating. If you were watching Rachel Maddow last night like I was, she came in and said, I have to now throw out all six of my segments because this news just broke. Donald Trump told his private counsel or the White House counsel to go to the attorney general and ordered him to not recuse himself in a subject where he was greatly involved. He had met Russians. He had been involved in the campaign. He had to recuse himself. This is what I've always said. Trump believing that he is now the mayor of New York and that he can order any deputy assistant DA in southern Manhattan to do his bidding for real estate purposes.
So Malcolm, what gave Sessions the moral fortitude to disobey his president?
The possibility of him going to prison.
That's exactly right.
And let me tell you, Don McGahn has just turned himself into witness for the prosecution number 523.
Yeah.
I mean, he will now be called in as a key witness to determine, did the president order him to obstruct justice?
You know, I suspect that Malcolm is ramping up here, and we'll have to take a quick break. And I think Rich may have a slightly different opinion of the whole affair. Our email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We have Alan Shartok on the panel. We have former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Henk. We have counterterrorism expert. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC 933 on a frigid Friday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel. Alan Shartok, Judith Henk, Malcolm Nance, and Rich Honan. You can join in the fun by emailing panel@wamc.org. And things were about to get heated as we discuss Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump. You know, the usual roundtable fare. But before we do that and get back to that, Alan, we have some letters.
Yes, I do. Yes.
Shall we read them?
We do.
Okay.
Okay. Mary says, please keep up the humor.
Aha.
Good frigid morning, illustrious panel. I'm grateful for the laughs the panel provides, so please don't let the humorless critics stop you. And that's from Mary. Never have.
No.
That's all right. I'll give them to you.
Ray, they called you humorless.
That is not funny.
And James says, climate change. From my limited scientific knowledge, with the melting of the Arctic glaciers and the difference in the densities of fresh water and salt water, wouldn't that disrupt the northern Gulf Stream and North Atlantic Drift, which would result in cooling of Europe, causing a mini ice age? And that's from James.
Well, what we're experiencing now is due to a low pressure system that dropped rapidly. And coastal flooding is a real issue. I don't know if you've seen the pictures of Boston lately.
And Rockport.
When you see flooding in the summertime, it's, you know, it almost looks inviting, people walking through the deep water, not knowing that there's lots of sewage and chemicals in that water. But if you're in a coastal community in Massachusetts and Maine, that's really cold water, and doing a number on your homes and your cars, and sea level rise plays a role in that.
Wow. Yeah.
Although the Boston flooding was just the lunar arrangement this week. Which,
oh, is that what that was? That was
Yeah, well, you know.
That was crazy. Way,
yeah.
When Niagara.
Boston Harbor.
When Niagara freezes. The Statler brothers sang about that, I believe. When Niagara freezes.
Note to engineering. Do not cue up any Statler brothers while I'm on the air, all right? Thank you.
Ray, our good friend Ray, who I love, writes, irony. Consider the irony. Oh, actually, it's from Ray's other half, Cora, who I also love, says, consider the irony. Trump at war with the media while giving a journalist personal access to his administration, resulting in an explosive book. But here's the thing, Cora, just so you'll know, the president of the United States, who never lies, said he gave no access to Wolf for this book.
But Michael Wolff says he has tapes, and someone on his staff. I mean, Wolff
Bannon. Bannon.
Yeah, but where's the rest of the staff? I mean, this guy had, he would just sit outside the West Wing for hours, and as people were walking by, they would sit down and talk to him. I mean, I understand why the White House is upset with this book, but they brought it on themselves.
Yeah. Well, they certainly brought it upon themselves. Of that, there's nothing that's ever been said truer before these microphones. Right. And Roxanne, I'm so sorry, said, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. Please be aware that fleece is a plastic and is polluting our oceans. Every time it is washed, microfibers are shed and go directly into the water supply. I'm sure Judith would have more to say on this. I love fleece, too. But this is the reality. And that's from Roxanne.
Who brought up fleece?
I brought up fleece.
Oh, it's Malcolm's
fault. Okay, as former chief of the U.S. Navy Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape School, where we taught survival, cotton in winter kills. And these people are wearing cotton hoodies, kids that are out wearing cotton hoodies,
like,
and cotton t-shirts. Yeah, that one, you too.
Don't worry, it doesn't kill reliably.
It doesn't kill
when you sweat, that cold, that sweat goes into the cotton, will make you colder, lower your core temperature, and for people who are living on the street, will kill you.
So what should you wear, wool?
Yeah, wool or, you know, fleece. Most fleece these days is recycled plastic, so like Patagonia, it's very responsible, and you're getting stuff out of the ocean.
I'm not going to disagree with that. I do think the letter writer, though, actually has a point. Most fleece, when you wash it, and I know this is just going to drive everyone nuts, but it is true. When you wash it in the washing machine, little bits of microfibers go down the drain, and a lot of that is showing up in the ocean. Patagonia is putting a lot of money into research in terms of if you can afford to purchase Patagonia, is putting a lot of money into research on how to design their products differently. It seems minor, but actually microfiber is a big issue among marine ecologists and researchers.
Yeah, not as much as, you know, gigantic New England size floating piles of plastic that people dump out there.
Well, it is plastic.
Yeah, that's what's being taken in use.
Your microfibers,
for
fleece, so. It does have plastic in it.
What do you think, Rich?
I agree.
Is that the socialist in
that's
you
the,
or
that's the
lawyer
in you? The attorney way to go.
Denise writes about a Puerto Rico. Good morning, panel.
Mm-hmm. Morning.
Good morning.
Please remind everyone that much of Puerto Rico still does not have light and potable water.
Well,
I spoke
50%.
To a good friend in San Juan yesterday, and he said, contrary to news reports, much of San Juan does not have light, and many people who have generators no longer do because they have broken down.
Right.
Tomorrow is a major holiday, Three Kings Day. Yes. Neighbors are helping each other celebrate and trying to keep spirits up, though people are angry at the failure of Donald Trump and Republicans to even give a damn. And that's from Denise and Judith Enck, of course, as the Region 2 administrator, had Puerto Rico in your bailiwick.
I did. Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And a day doesn't go by where I'm not extremely concerned about what is going on there. I think Trump doesn't even think about Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands at all. I talked to lots of friends over the holidays. They had a terrible holiday season. People who can afford to get backup generators, a lot of them are breaking because by definition, they're backup generators. A friend of mine heard,
I mean, they can't go forever.
Yeah, you're supposed to only run them for a few hours, not 24/7. A friend of mine that I was speaking to right before Christmas, her partner has a small business. She was out of work for a month, went back. It cost her $1,000 a month to run her generator at her business. So even if you're lucky enough to have the generator, the diesel is expensive. They break down a lot. And there's a lot of misery still in the Caribbean that, you know, the news cycle has moved on. But I think this is Trump's Katrina, and it's going to be with him for years.
Do you really think it is his Katrina in that most people know and it's on the top of their intellectual hit list that Puerto Rico has been left to run itself?
Well, if you believe the independent counters, over 1,000 people have died in Puerto Rico after the storm.
No. I get that.
Yeah. So
I get that.
In terms
of
like the numbers of fatalities, it is approaching Katrina numbers.
I'm just talking about, is there a public consciousness of what's happening in Puerto Rico? That's my issue.
I don't think there is.
Yeah, no. Okay. Well, all right. And Fred said, good morning.
Morning, Fred.
You're the only one who's playing along, Malcolm.
Isn't this just more protectionism for tobacco, alcohol, and now Big Pharma? Pot bad, we is good. It says we is good.
Weed, I think
maybe?
He's trying
to say. Pot bad, we is good. Thanks, Fred, from Fred. All right. And from Nick says, Rich and marijuana. Would you ask Rich? They're baiting you, Rich. They're baiting you.
I didn't even say anything.
No, that's correct.
Right. I've noticed that. I'm trying to draw you out.
You said you were in a band.
I'm trying to draw you out. Would you ask, Rich, why Republicans used to favor states' rights but don't anymore?
Well, that's what, you know, you mentioned the 10th Amendment, and I thought, Rich, that would be an angle that you'd want to talk about as far as states' rights.
Yeah, the thing about states, I think Republicans still favor states' rights. The problem is, remember that states' rights was also the banner used by the Democrats in, you know, 1850, 1860 to justify such things as slavery. Mm-hmm. Okay. States' rights. And by the way, it's a lot of the same democratic things like nullification, resistance, defying, the same things that went on in the 1860s that resulted in secession, okay, are some of the things that are being talked about now. So I think you have to be careful about states' rights. I think all Sessions was trying to do to get it back to Sessions was, I think, yes, I think he probably believes that marijuana is a bigger evil than any of us here mm-hmm. and any of us listening think. Okay. I think as far as the opioid crisis, I think he would agree that that is probably that's certainly a bigger crisis. He might find more of a linkage between the two than what we see. And I'm not sure. I don't think he's right on that, but I think that would be his thinking.
If this is directed from higher than Sessions, then Alan's point about this being political warfare makes more sense, because look at the states that have legalized this.
Yeah.
Now, anything that happens from Sessions, whether it's nothing or anything, will disrupt that market. In other words, there is now uncertainty that there was not two days ago in Washington, in California, in Colorado. So this has already made
the stocks are already wavering.
I think you're giving Jeff Sessions too much credit. I think he has been on a personal crusade against the use of marijuana for decades. When he was in the Senate, this is coming from him. I think. Where, again, what is the federal interest here when there are such severe drug problems that do need the attention of federal lawyers? I think this is all him, and this is him playing out his personal views on how evil
that's right.
Marijuana
I think he
is.
Bases them on, you know, when he was growing up watching Dobie Gillis and thinking Maynard G. Ferguson. That old doper.
Maynard G. Krebs.
I have not heard him make a distinction between medical marijuana and recreational marijuana, and I think that's very important.
Evil reefer madness.
I think he's
to
against
him,
all of it, even if it's for medical.
Well, you know,
relief.
Not to be the conservative on this panel, since Rich is shutting up today, and that is to say, we don't know what the results of legal marijuana are going to turn out to be.
And there are legitimate concerns. I have those
But
concerns.
He hasn't ordered look, I mean, if you ask him what his priorities are, what he has said publicly are things like MS-13 and gang violence and things like that.
So why mention it now? That's the question.
Well, first of all, I think there's been I agree with Judith. I think that he just I think he believes marijuana is evil. I think, like I said before, I think he finds some linkage with which I do not agree. But I think he finds some linkage between marijuana and the opioid crisis in just this kind of overall view. I don't agree. I don't agree with him. But I think if you were to ask him, that's part of what he says.
God, so we're back to the beginning of Reagan's war on drugs. And we're going
to
start this multi-trillion dollar boondoggle all over again by, you know, as opposed to, you know, using... supposed to cutting the legs out from under the market of these drug lords and drug dealers by legalizing this thing. And I'm not saying that I'm for legalization. I spent 20 years, you know, or decades in the military. I've never touched this stuff, can't touch this stuff. But it appears that there's some merit medicinally, and it appears that it does undercut the international drug market.
We need to take a Cheetos break here on the round table.
Cheetos break,
it is 9:46. We have the munchies. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. We'll talk more Sessions in a moment. I'll be honest with you. I've always been a big sucker for the Peter Gunn soundtrack from Henry Mancini. And that's Phil Woods and Carl Saunders.
I don't like it.
You don't like the show. We had this believe it or not, Alan and I had the discussion about Peter Gunn, the program, earlier in the week to show you how pathetic we both really are.
Yeah.
You like the Canon detective show.
Well, that's on earlier.
Yeah.
As I have pointed out to you.
So anyway.
I want to request more Sharon Jones and the Dap
Sharon
Kings.
Jones. And so does our producer,
week,
Sarah LaDuke.
Yes.
Okay,
this was
fair
a
enough.
Shameless pitch to Sarah in the next room.
Yeah, all right. And, you know, we were talking about Jeff Sessions and pot, and we also discussed this report that's on the AP and the New York Times and elsewhere that several people are saying Donald Trump directed his counsel, his White House counsel, to tell Jeff Sessions not to recuse himself. In the break just now, Malcolm Nance said all this stuff is second fiddle to the fact that Sessions is on his way out soon.
Well, he wants to get rid of Sessions. If he gets rid of Sessions, sure. he can appoint an attorney general who will not be able to recuse himself,
right.
especially if he had nothing to do with the Russian inquiry.
But he's afraid to do it, right, Malcolm? And
yeah.
The reason he's afraid to do it is everybody's saying the I word, you know, the impeachment word. So Judith is making a frown on her face as if she doesn't understand what I'm talking about. But today in the Washington Examiner, that liberal bastion, no, that's sarcastic. Okay, just
yes, it is.
Write it down, folks, sarcastic.
Okay.
You had Meadows, what's his name?
Mark
Meadows,
Mark.
Who is
Freedom
probably
Caucus.
The most conservative
Lunatic.
Guy in the House of Representatives, and a friend of his writing a joint column about how, you know, Sessions had to go. That is, I'm sure, in concert with the White House.
Jihad is on. And yes. They are definitely, if they get rid of Sessions,
yes.
which I'd hate to say may be our last hope of keeping Mueller and Rosenstein in their office, then Trump will get what he wants, which the New York Times wrote about. He expects the attorney general. He said, why doesn't he protect me? He does not understand the attorney general does not work for the president. That's the White House counsel. He thinks it's his water carrier, and he's going to put someone in there who will become his water carrier, and we will have a new phase of Watergate 2.0.
Okay, so that leads me to ask the panel, what's plan B? I mean, after all, Mueller is not a dope. He's sitting there. He's got to examine the possibility they're going to eventually dispatch him. Because they have to, because it's getting too close.
Why would they do that?
Well,
why does anybody think Trump's thinking of doing that?
I tell
Mueller
you,
has been,
Trump
his,
says
his
it?
Investigation has been totally discredited. He's been totally declawed. Anything that comes out of the Mueller investigation is so flawed at this
now
point.
Now you've done
just
it.
Just let the guy. Just let the guy
Rich.
Go.
Look into my eyes.
Last time I was here with all you four, you guys were telling me that Tillerson was not going to last the day. Okay, so and last time I looked, he's still here.
I still think
okay?
he's on his way out.
I think Sessions.
Who?
Sessions is definitely on his way out at some point. But Mueller. What?
Here's why I think.
What do you mean he's thoroughly discredited? Of all the nonsense.
I'd like to hear.
Heard.
Hey, one at a time here, Malcolm.
I'd like to hear Rich's reasoning behind what he thinks, other than the fact that you're conservative. Why do you think Mueller is doing nothing, clawless, discredited, blah, blah, blah? What are you hearing?
Because he has surrounded himself very clearly with...
Don't say it.
I'm going to say it. He surrounded himself very clearly with people who are outright
Clinton
advocates, who have shown remarkable lacks of judgment. And
one that we know of.
Yeah, one that we know of.
One.
Okay. And,
was
so,
fired.
And even there, we don't know it. We know his wife ran for political office.
We are talking about the FBI being his principal investigative body, right? The FBI that is overwhelmingly conservative. The FBI that investigated Hillary Clinton to no end. The same FBI that...
To no avail.
To no avail because there's no crime. You can't do anything. But now we have this entire organization which views themselves as bringing... justice and integrity first, with a former Republican war hero, three times director of FBI for the president, multiple presidents, Republican, Democrat, and you all suddenly say, oh, I can't trust that guy. But you'll trust the heck out of him if he says something about terrorism.
There's nothing sudden about it. We never thought we could trust the guy. I think most people think
in the
you
beginning.
Can't. You can't. No, no.
no.
Most
Remember
people
Newt
think you can't
Gingrich's
trust.
Quotes
one at a
in
time.
The beginning.
One at a time.
Yeah. Most people say you can't trust special prosecutors anyway.
Oh.
And there's no. You can't argue but that he is surrounded by Clinton advocates.
The guy, I can
the,
argue.
The people in charge
point.
Of
How
the
you
investigation
know that?
When his wife gets right, gets $500,000 from a friend of Clinton, that's nothing?
Sure
not. Okay, so that guy was dispatched. How do you know what you just...
Once it became public.
Look, Rich, you've been the boss of people, right? You find out that somebody who works for you has done something that is not ethical or right, you fire him. Right?
But they did. I don't think McCabe did anything unethical. I think his wife ran for state senate
That's
in
right.
Virginia
why was
long
she
before he was in that position,
yeah,
and she accepted campaign contributions. Husbands and wives have different professional identities and roles.
Can I give you a quick test?
Well, let me ask you first.
Yeah.
every one of us, well, you guys especially, I'm pointing, it doesn't do a lot well, good no, to point
are,
on the radio.
Judith
and Malcolm, no, you folks have worked in the government, and the rest of us are in private business, but we all have conflicts protocols that mm-hmm. we have to follow.
Yep.
So I have to tell people, you know, if my where my I tell my firm where my kids work or something, so that we know if there's an inherent conflict. You know that in any one of your governmental jobs, that would have should have come up on a conflict check, and somebody would have said, listen, we know there's nothing there, but it's a lot better that you, McCabe, you don't be involved in this investigation.
Okay, but
there's no way that would have happened in any governmental agency you guys were
quick
part
question
of.
Did you believe in the results of Ken Starr in with Bill Clinton, which led to his impeachment but not his prosecution?
Did I believe?
Do you believe that any of that stuff is true, any of the accusations that were made was true?
Well, I believe he's
a special prosecutor.
Yeah, so. And remember, he was supposed to prosecute Whitewater. We never saw a thing out of that, and all that happened was, as so often happens, and you know better
than
anybody.
Did you have any problem with the results?
Sure, I did, because I thought
you think Bill Clinton shouldn't have been impeached?
Of course, he shouldn't have been impeached.
Okay, but you didn't think any of that investigation was legitimate, right? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think the thing that Clinton ended up, and I know he admitted to things, okay, and I'm not here as an apologist for Bill Clinton, but
really?
But none of that came out of the original investigation. Right. Like every investigation, right. It came out of somebody saying something stupid mm-hmm. while they were either under oath or you know, de facto under oath.
But my point being, you felt it was legitimate that the special counsel could go out and use the FBI to investigate and have findings on the basis of their investigation.
I personally
right?
did not. I didn't see.
You don't have a problem with it?
I think most of the special prosecutors that we've seen, and you know, like, you know, I go back to, you know, Nixon as well. Okay, I think there were cases there that made more sense, but that goes to my point that I don't think the Clinton investigation at the end of the day found nothing wrong with Whitewater.
Here's my point.
I think it was a waste of time and money.
Every person involved in that was Republican. No one ever said about the FBI, you guys who are in the FBI, you're Republicans or you donated to a Republican. Everyone believes that the Justice Department and the FBI, when they carry out their investigatory practices, are doing it to the best of their ability as law enforcement professionals.
No, they didn't. Everybody thought the Starr investigation was a witch hunt.
Not Ken Starr.
Not
Ken Starr. I'm talking about the FBI. Who carried out their task. Suddenly, conservatives have no interest in the FBI's integrity because one guy's wife, before any of this began,
exercised her constitutional rights.
I want to say that I see this in an overall context, and that is Donald Trump, pardon me, thinks that he is facing impeachment right now. And as a result, as things get tighter and tighter there, he is looking for any way out. And one of the ways out is his allies write columns for the Examiner saying that Sessions should go. We all know what that's about, so he can get his own AG in there and replace Rosenstein and get rid of Mueller. He is going, I've said it from the beginning, he is going to have to fire Mueller one way or the other. He has no choice.
I agree with you, and I think he's going to take a shot at it. And Donald Trump's biggest problem, I'm writing an entire new book about this, is democracy. He does not understand
checks
the machinations of how American government was designed
right.
by those brilliant men of the Enlightenment who saw we eventually would have a tyrant or a king wannabe. But, you know, we now have a complicit Congress, which makes it far more difficult
right.
to actually defend the
yes.
American Republican system as it has existed since the time of the
founding. And unlike people like Meadows, who are going to feel the wrath as this thing unfolds more and more, there are Republicans in the United States Congress who have to be watching this, and the Senate particularly, have to be watching this right now and say, it's time to get off the ship. It's time to go the other way.
Well, I think there you see all these unprecedented resignations from Congress. But I think before we can get to impeachment, the House and the Senate have to flip in November. But
they have
I think
to more than flip.
I think the other I word that Trump yeah. is more immediately worried about is his indictments and of his family. I mean, putting aside the issue of can a sitting president be indicted, his son-in-law can be, his son can be. And I'm again, it comes back to another reason why nepotism is a bad
thing. Which is why the president is so infuriated about the book, about the Wolf book. Because these allegations by Bannon about the daughter and the son-in-law mean that they may well be on the way to the hoosegow.
Well, you know, my biggest problem with the entire narrative coming from our conservative brethren, and full disclosure, I was a Republican most of my life.
Hey, I ran for office as a Democrat.
Well, there you go.
We all see the light at some point.
We got a couple all of a sudden.
And then I started listening to what they were saying. But my problem here is the very fact that we are not talking about just the presidency. We're talking about this started as a national counterintelligence investigation. The national security of the United States is at stake, and our electoral process was at stake. And it took foreign intelligence agencies to tip us off on this, and we have an entire group of Americans, as much as 30%, who do not care about the integrity of this nation.
All right, that's
that bugs
spot
me
to,
more than anything.
And if you cared, you'd run for Congress.
Malcolm
and
Nance.
And you too, Judith.
Malcolm Nance is here.
We're
Judith
in the same Hank district.
Is here. They run against each other as a team.
Never.
Rich Honan is here. Alan Chartok is here. You are here. If you write to panel at WAMC.org, try to keep them short to the point. We'll take a break for news, and we'll be back. All right, bonus points to anybody who can give me the title of this one.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Lucky? Yeah, theme for Mr. Lucky? You know, this is like a cocktail party. I wish we
Without the cocktails.
Wish we had a recording. I know, we need cocktails. That's a good point. I wish we had a recording
of the conversation before we showed up.
We could do that.
Physician's assistants on submarines, and what else do we have?
No, we could do that. That's a great idea. You know, on 60 Minutes now, right? That program on Sunday nights.
Oh, that new program?
Yeah, that new one.
Oh, yeah.
You know, on 60 Minutes, they always say, if you want more on this subject, or if you want to hear more, you go to this email address or whatever, this web address.
It's probably a website.
Well, yeah, that's right, Rich. You're
it's on the interweb.
You're so smart. And you go to this website and you get more. We could do that. We could take the conversations and blip out anything that, you know, one might not.
So basically,
well, then there'd be
everything.
Nothing left.
Yes.
We actually had a proposal at one point at NBC. Somebody said they should do a segment called Green Room, and all they would do is play unedited cuts of people sitting in the green rooms.
Extremely dangerous.
Very dangerous, but you want to talk about some crossfire type near fist fights happening.
You'd have to have one called In the Men's Room.
Nothing happens.
Because everything moves, don't you see?
Okay.
You're in the green room.
Ray, get control of this, will you please?
You know, I've lost control of the program.
Thanks for sharing.
Again. This is the round table,
Ray,
more or less.
Ray, professional in radio.
Semi-professional. It is 10:06. It is a Friday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The email address is panel@wamc.org. And what a panel we have today. We have Malcolm Nance. We have Rich Honan. They've been really agreeing on a lot of stuff today. Judith Enck is here, Alan Chartok, and we have some more letters.
We do, Uncle Ray. David says, wouldn't a new attorney general need to be approved by the Senate? That's right. Mm-hmm. And by the way, there have been all kinds of senators who have said, not me, I'm not going to do that if he fires the attorney general.
And remember, with Doug Jones, it's tighter. You know, they just have a one-vote margin among Republicans in the Senate.
Yeah, and the beautiful part is that Rosenstein will remain acting attorney general.
Yeah, that would
so
be
it
beautiful.
Could happen, but, you know, I don't know whether Trump would put enough muscle behind it.
Well, Rosenstein could be acting until the Senate votes.
No, Trump would have
to
get rid of him, too.
Oh, I think he would.
Right.
He really doesn't like him. He tweeted about him.
Looking for his Robert
Bork. He's a Democrat from Baltimore. I mean, how low can you go?
And he's a Republican.
And he's a Republican.
Crab cakes.
There's no Republican.
Okay, here. Thank you for that. Okay, and Nancy says, Sessions has strong ties to the private prison industry. Locking people up for smoking pot is low-hanging fruit for them. They like nonviolent offender inmates for their forced work programs. Thanks, and that's from Nancy.
Actually, I don't think it's forced work program. As I understand it, they get per diem for everyone that's locked up. They actually get paid a stipend by the government, and it is for profit.
Not unlike the public schools. They get a per diem for, right? They get paid.
No, that's charter schools.
They get paid by the pupil.
Charter schools get paid.
Yes, and we heard from Eric, who said, Rich, Marijuana and slavery are not moral equivalents. States' rights for... I don't get that one either. States' rights for pot, guns, and abortion? States' rights is the right wing's mantra as long as it suits their ideology. Well, I agree with that. And
it is fungible on the right when
well,
they
fungible. Well
when
done.
They say they want states'
Rich, you
rights.
Want to answer
somebody,
that?
Somebody read some Civil War history and look at the people who talked about states' rights.
Well, right? So yeah, you're yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah we know about right. the states' rights argument, but I also can make the same argument that all of those quote-unquote Democrats you keep talking about became Republicans after the 1964 Civil Rights Act. So, you know, each party switched in the late 60s.
It was just like in the square dance.
Wait, who passed the Civil Rights Act of 1964?
Lyndon B. Johnson, Democrat. Yeah, from Texas.
But with the help from who? And Alan, you know I'm right on this.
What?
With the help...
I seldom think you're right on anything.
Johnson had to go to the Republicans to get the Civil Rights Act of 64 passed.
Right.
Because
they
know that to be
true. That's right. Because they saw the train coming down the track and they were a little bit concerned.
No, Johnson because there were a lot of Democrat racists in the Senate.
And remember, Johnson said that when he did that, he kissed the Democratic
South
goodbye forever.
That's what he said.
And maybe it's turning with Doug Jones.
Michael said, you cannot compare the Democratic Party of Reconstruction, he is. We were just saying that, or the Civil War with the Democratic Party of today. They switched policy places. Lincoln was a Republican, and as I see it, a liberal.
You know, there was a funny TV show called Quick Draw, which didn't get a lot of play, but there are two women in it named Frances and Angela, two black women, and they go by the name Frangela. And they did a segment in there as two black women during the post-Civil War West, and one of their riffs was how blacks will never, ever vote for a Democrat.
Hmm.
And they will love Republicans to the end of time because Lincoln was a Republican at the time.
And Michael says, where's my Roy Cohn?
Mm-hmm.
Hello, panel.
Hello, Michael.
Regarding Sessions' recusal at prompting of the president, according to the New York Times today, Trump erupted, where's my Roy Cohn?
Yeah.
Referring to his notorious McCarthyite mentor. Some of us have long memories. What does the panel make of that particular outburst? Well, you know, Roy Cohn in my house, of course, was regarded as below dirt. He was a bad guy.
Very bad.
And he sat there.
We all agree.
You feel the same about RFK?
I was about to raise
guy,
that.
But
he sat there on the McCarthy panel with RFK, who we are told by those people who loved RFK had a change in his philosophy and his life. No question, Roy Cohn was a bad guy. But when he died, if you remember the obits, they were incredibly positive. For the most part, they were incredibly positive, and I didn't get it. I think Barbara Wawa and other people were all, you know, I don't know, referred
to. Did you read it? There's a book called The Autobiography of Roy Cohn, and it's written by Sidney Zion, which is great anyway, right? And he was a great legal writer. It's really fascinating. And Cohn was a bad guy, but the times that he lived in were fascinating, the people that he bumped up against. It's a real good read.
But he was buddies with Trump and gave Trump the idea to run for office. And did the book address, I've read this a few times, I don't know if this is accurate, that Trump severed his relationship with him when he was HIV positive.
When he was what?
HIV positive.
Yeah, right. And it was one of the worst things about Cohn, of course, which is, his sort of hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Vincent says, comment. I think there is a big difference between decriminalizing marijuana and legalizing it, and the difference is marketing and advertising. Mm. I don't want to live in a place where my 12-year-old daughter is bombarded with advertising promoting the best high, and that's from Vincent.
Nice. I think Vincent.
Nice comment.
Vincent
I wouldn't have
loved
given
that point.
I mean, pot advocates are going to say, "Well, you see, advertisement for liquor and everything
and
else,
and that's not good."
And your 12-year-old is bombarded by
And there's
by those.
Restrictions on tobacco advertising toward kids. You can't put up those billboards near schools, and I don't think children should be targeted for any of that stuff,
so
which is not good for them.
Today has announced in England that they're trying to get out of the tobacco business.
Philip Morris.
Wow. I believe so. Who does what
they
is
have
their
a
major,
new name? Altria.
What's their major brand? Philip Morris. I think I'm right.
I don't know.
I may be wrong. But it's one of the major.
I hope that's true. I'm sure the tobacco litigation by the states
helped. Well, the naysayers are causing all kinds of lifted eyebrows as if this is true because they're trying to come up with other kinds of things they can sell.
Maybe they're getting into marijuana.
Bruce, he said, POTUS is the one who is supposed to remember. The president is the one who is supposed to remember when public attention moves on from Puerto Rico and other analogous situations. The president is supposed to keep the efforts going. We have an empathy-bereft president, and Puerto Rico is paying for it. Jennifer says, wool. I agree that cotton does nothing to keep you warm, but how about reviving wool as a high-performance fiber that is remarkable for staying warm, and you can get it in washable, itch-free fabrics. Plus, it can be cleanly composted, I'm so sorry, at the end of life. And that's from Jennifer. And we did make that point about wool earlier.
It's good. As a matter of fact, merino is now the big athletic wear type of wool that everybody uses. And I do. I'm wearing
Patagonia
wool right
now. You can support local agriculture, too.
But I'm told cotton is good if you're in a radioactive situation. In other words, it protects against some radioactivity. I think Edward Teller talked about that.
I think gamma rays and stuff like that are absorbed by higher levels
better.
Of clothing.
Just wear a metal coat.
I wear a tinfoil hat.
I think you're all probably wrong because when it happens, if it happens, as they say, spread your legs and kiss your behind
next
goodbye.
Next letter, thank
okay,
you.
Okay, here we go.
For sharing.
It won't matter whether you're wearing wool. And Rich and marijuana. Would you ask Rich why Republicans use to favor states' rights but don't
anymore? We already
anymore?
Asked him.
Oh, yeah, we've been through this.
We did.
Done.
This, right. Okay. And Frank, legal in New York, when will tax-hungry New York legalize marijuana? Seems like something the state would want to do to help fill the coffers.
Andrew's against this.
Correct. Correct. He does not want recreational marijuana, yeah. And I agree with him.
And even the medical marijuana was very strictly.
Yeah, controlled.
Yeah. I mean, they might have changed it, but in the beginning, I think PTSD was not one of the diseases that you were allowed to use medical marijuana for originally.
Mm-hmm. Roy says Sessions' marijuana motive. Sessions' crackdown on marijuana has multiple motives. Malcolm is right that one of them is to feed bodies to private prisons. But what desired side effect also goes with that? Voter suppression. African Americans are more prosecuted for the same marijuana offenses as whites. That's certainly always been true. That's an aside by me. Sending them disproportionately to prison makes them felons and kicks them off the voter rolls. Erasing black votes has never been far from Jefferson Beauregard's mind. And that's from Royce.
I wanted to bring this up quickly for Judith's benefit. California Governor Jerry Brown and other West Coast governors say the Trump administration's opening of federal waters to offshore drilling is reckless and short-sighted. In a statement Thursday, the Democratic leaders of California, Oregon, and Washington pledged to do whatever it takes to stop the move. The condemnation follows the U.S. Interior Department's announced plan to open most of the U.S. coast to oil leases in federal waters. It's the most expansive offshore drilling proposal in decades, and it comes in response to President Trump's executive order in April encouraging more drilling rights in federal waters. And, you know, I had a feeling that Judith Enck might have an opinion on this.
Yep.
Well, it continues the Trump assault on the environment. And I think Ryan Zinke and Scott Pruitt are now in competition for, you know, the most anti-environmental cabinet members ever. I mean, this is very, very serious. This can open up not only the Arctic, but the Atlantic, the Pacific. And, you know, the Republican governor of Florida is strongly opposed. And this is all going to go down in the next 18 months. And I think it's essential that Congress intervene and stop this. Just looking at the economics of this, certainly the oil industry is in favor. But what about the tourism industry? What about the fishing industry? What about the recreation industry? And there are really two elements to this. One is we don't want another Deepwater Horizon spill. That occurred during my first year at EPA. And it was I was not directly involved in this. It was handled by our southern regions in Washington. But I certainly watched it unfold. Mm. And remember, a few weeks ago, right before Christmas, the Trump administration also loosened regulations on oil drilling. So there are the issues of the threats to our ocean and our marine environment. But also, why promote heavier reliance on oil. With everything we know about climate change, we need to be opening up offshore wind, for instance. That is so much safer, cheaper, and reliable. But well, this is all about the oil industry.
According to Donald Trump, they kill birds. And that's why we shouldn't use wind, which is another industry we have totally ceded to China.
Mm-hmm.
Solar panels, mm-hmm. China. Wind, China. Hydroelectric generators, China. The United States is lagging behind every advanced technology because dinosaurs want us to go back to coal mm-hmm. and oil, and China is eating our okay. lunch.
Well, clearly that didn't happen in the Trump. The year Trump has been in office.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's been going on for some time.
Oh, no. But our dependence
on that market forever.
Trump
our dependence on oil and coal has lessened. There are 10 million renewable energy jobs in the United States, and he would rather get rid of those than to increase maybe 5,000 or 6,000 more guys in coal that China will not buy from us.
And to Malcolm's point, there's actually a policy being considered in Washington that would restrict Chinese imports of solar panels.
Right.
Now, I'd love to see more solar panels developed here in the United States.
And every time we have a production company, they seem to be doing not too well.
So the Obama administration tried to do that, restrict imports of solar panels, solar panel components to America. And the problem was it had the opposite effect because there were solar panel solar manufacturers right here in New York State, by the way, who could not right where you are, actually.
Sundog.
They couldn't get the components right, that they were right. previously getting from China because now the tariff was put on.
And at the same time, the price of solar is down 90% if you want to put solar on your house.
And it's down because of
but
Chinese
that may change. Exactly.
panels.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is, and I'm afraid to say this for those who have solar now in many instances, they're leasing your roof.
Mm-hmm.
You don't own, if
yeah.
you're leasing
yeah.
those
Nothing
panels
wrong
for
with
25
that.
Years, 25 years from now, those panels will be virtually inefficient. And
I can't get it for my house.
Well, except that the solar panel manufacturers, the ones that we work with, are doing things. And by the way, you know, I do a lot of venture capital work, a lot of startup companies. There's tons of research going into renewables. The problem is we're still just not as far along at producing energy through renewables as we are through carbon-based. We're trying to get there.
Yeah, and that's got to change. This is why we need to accelerate.
This has been 20 years we've been working on
we've
it.
Yeah,
but the
this.
Big money has really not been in this for the last 10 years.
There's been tons of private money going into it.
That private money to China because they can make it for $1 an hour.
On solar panels, yes, but on wind, on tide, even LNG, even liquid natural gas in different ways of extraction.
And also on the environment, Dave checked in. And here's what Dave had to say. You might be interested. Good cold morning to all. So wearing wool is good, but growing wool leads to overgrazing, increased carbon emissions, and excessive fuel use to grow feed. Here's a sentence I don't understand. I imagine that...
Wait, you understood the previous one?
Yes. Yeah, I did. But
it was a case for sustainable agriculture.
I imagine the pluses and minuses of wool, got that, versus geese.
Okay. Thanks for sharing.
May get to close to zero when all is considered.
Okay. I heard that Donald Trump, when he in the state of New York, would rent flocks of sheep and put them on his outside of the city properties to get a farm subsidy.
So he
encouraged wool, but not for the reasons we're
people do the same. People used to do the same for dairy cattle before the 1986 Tax Act. Yeah.
And from Horace, query political makeup of Mueller's team. Dear panel, enjoying the listening from Bennington, Vermont, playing devil's advocate. Wouldn't Trump want a very liberal-leaning staff working with the special prosecutor if they find nothing linking him to collusion? Then there's truly nothing there. Dream on. Only if he has something to hide after his blustering cannot cover would he fear. All right, I read that. And John says, conspiracy nonsense. Can the panel, especially Malcolm, explain why nothing has at all has leaked out of Washington about evidence of collusion President Trump with Russia? Allen even said in his 2017 yearly prediction that a conversation between Trump and Putin would surface. Just where's the evidence of that and collusion? It's all wishful thinking, speculation.
You know, these people who keep using that word collusion and going, there's no evidence of collusion. Stop using the word collusion because that's not law. All right. The law that's been violated is conspiracy. We have now convicted two people for lying to federal officers in furtherance of a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Two people have been indicted on conspiracy against the United States. You're not getting the quote unquote
which
evidence.
Is not a crime.
Well, conspiracy is a crime.
No.
They have 30 seconds.
One of the things Flynn that they were talking about with Flynn is not a crime.
Yeah,
right.
Well, what he did was lie to
he
federal
lied to
officers
federal, which is
in
how
furtherance
it always happens.
Of a conspiracy. Don't worry, there's a lot more evidence coming.
I'm afraid we will have to leave it there, and I have a feeling that this conversation will begin again at some point. If you want to weigh in, wait till the next show, but it's panel at WAMC.org. Alan Shartok, have a lovely weekend.
And everybody, send your money in to make sure that we can get to that $2 million, WAMC.org.
Right you are, sir. Judith Eng, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Malcolm Nance, you didn't even know you were on the show. You did a good job.
Oh, you'll see me in a month or so.
And Rich Honan, thank you, sir. You've done well, and we appreciate it. Once again, the email is panel at WAMC.org. It's the Roundtable. Lots more to come.